This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
I paid my dues time after time. I've done my sentence, but committed no crime. And bad mistakes,
hello and welcome to Tag Teams Back Again.
Whoop, there it is.
Yeah, no 6 week break this time.
Hell no.
No, we're back again. Yeah, we're gonna be pumping them out a bit faster this time, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I hope so.
I thought it was just a one time thing.
Well, I
get us on track so that we have like one a month again.
That's right. Well, you know, I was out of the podcast game for a while, and I feel I've missed out, and I want to, yeah.
I could try to fit it in my schedule.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We still have a lot of 1987 to talk about. So, yeah, this time around, we are doing something that we did, I believe, for the second episode, which was look at makeshift or unusual tag team combinations, not your regular tag teams that we've been mostly looking at month after month. So this time we'll get to look at people like Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, Roddy Piper, Ricky Steamboat, ST Jones, you know, star-studded lineup here.
The man from Antigua.
Yes. So yeah, some fun matches, some, you know, one that's definitely talked about quite a bit. The others, not so much, at least that I know of. And actually, going into this, I'd only seen the one match before. I hadn't seen any of the others.
Same match that's the match I've also seen.
Yes. So we're looking at five matches today. Yeah, well, let's get right into it. Marty, or I guess before we start, anything you want to hype or pimp?
Yeah, I like to do mine up front. Everybody always does theirs at the end, but what's to say somebody actually makes it to the end of your show? RidingSpaceMountain.blogspot.com. We got the third and final installment of the Freebirds versus the Von Erichs. That's a tag team feud we'll have to look at some point. So we're looking at 1984 and 1988. There will be a Best of Dick Murdoch, Captain Redneck, coming up. And I feel like there's another one, but I can't remember what it is at this moment. But yes, so I've gotten like halfway through everything I want to watch for Mid-South, Memphis, World Class, and AWA. And I'm trying to figure out if I'm going to take a break or keep going. But so a lot of 80s stuff. ProWrestlingOnly.com. I am Superstar Sleaze, SLEEZE, because misspelling is extreme. And you can read the reviews there also.
Yeah, that's some good stuff. I've been dabbling a bit in Mid-South. But yeah, Von Erichs, Freebirds, that's definitely a tailor-made episode.
You know what? You know which of the four promotions I think you would like the most, Kelly?
Which one?
World Class.
Really?
You know why I think you would like that the most?
Why is that?
You love babyface heat, and there is no bigger babyface territory, save maybe for the WWF, than World Class. My God, the Von Erichs are so over, and like the entire match is just based around the Von Erichs kicking ass.
Yeah, no, that's one that I've dabbled in, but of all of them that you mentioned, like Mid-South, AWA, I've definitely seen the least of World Class. So I would, I think I will eventually do that. Cool promotion. Yes, but today we are back, of course, in the WWF. And starting off things, we're going to the Mecca of professional wrestling, Madison Square Garden. The date is February 23rd. And what we're looking at is what you could maybe call a prototype Survivor Series match. The Survivor Series, the first Survivor Series show would have happened, of course, later in 1987 on Thanksgiving. And so this one is a six-man elimination match. Interesting group of people here. Basically, individuals involved in feuds at the time going into WrestleMania 3. So you
have, it's like the upper mid-card of WrestleMania 3, basically.
Yeah, essentially. On one side, you have Randy the Macho Man Savage, Intercontinental Champion. You have King Harley Race and adorable Adrian Adonis. And on the other side, you have Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, the Junkyard Dog, and Rowdy Roddy Piper. Now, this is one of the more impressive lineups for a match that we've looked at so far, Marty, I believe. All these names are pretty big. I mean, Adonis is sort of, I guess you would say, the lesser of the six. But even he had a pretty good career. Savage, Race, Steamboat, and Piper are all Hall of Famers in the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. And JYD is one that's considered like an oversight by a lot of people that should be in there. Huge star in Mid-South. So just an amazing collection of talent in here. Some had seen better days. Race was near the end of his career. JYD was near the end of his career. Or at least he was past his prime. He would actually hang on into the way into the 90s, actually. But the quality of his in-ring work had dropped pretty dramatically by this point. We have Gorilla Monsoon and Slick on commentary, which is, I guess, appropriate for a show looking at unusual tag teams. We're going to have various unusual commentary teams calling the matches tonight. Slick is quite funny, actually, on commentary. I'll get to that later.
JYD can't even read the rules.
And another reoccurring theme is the nuclear hot crowds for these matches. This is Madison Square Garden. This was Piper's, or is billed as Piper's, final match. Remember, he was going to retire, win, lose, or draw at WrestleMania 3, and he did for a couple years. So this is kind of a farewell match for Piper in New York, and just a great collection of guys. We got Savage and Steamboat on opposing sides. At this time, they were in a super heated feud, of course. And Marty, take it away.
Yeah, no, this is probably one of the best matches that we have seen on tag teams back again. I thought it was probably one. It was even probably, I mean, it's a hard word to define, but it was probably like most work ratey. I mean, a lot of that has to do with the fact that Harley Race was in the match. So everybody was infected with the suplex gene all of a sudden.
Yeah, that's true.
Just suplexing each other. But, so, yeah, I think a lot of that had to do with Harley being in there for a good chunk of the match. So, I mean, and I think it's a running joke that you make me watch a Junkyard Dog match.
Right, I forgot to mention that. We've seen quite a few Junkyard Dog matches.
Somehow I always end up having to watch the Junkyard Dog. But I will say, even though this is a great match without the Junkyard Dog being in there, I thought this was the best, one of the better Junkyard Dog performances. Like, he was quite energized at the beginning with his, like, rolling around and then doing his headbutt. I thought, you know, he was moving and grooving. So basically it starts off, babyface is clean house. Who better to do that against than Harley Race? Doesn't matter how old Harley is. He's obviously going to, he took big bumps for Vader too. So
yeah,
Harley in 1987, he was taking all sorts of bumps over the top rope and stuff. And it's just not a Harley Race match if he doesn't just like throw a belly to belly suplex out of nowhere. And that's just his transition. He's like, all right, I'm tagging out now. And it's just great. That's just who Harley Race is. And then so they do the big melee at the beginning. And I could have sworn somebody was going to get eliminated, but it was all, like one of those false ones. They got me all hyped up, and then they ended up doing the elimination later with the melee on the floor being the count out. And so that we ended up with the double count out of Adrian Adonis and Junkyard Dog. Adonis, pretty much all he did was the sleeper exchange with Piper. Otherwise, I didn't think Adonis had too big of an impact on this match.
No.
No, not really. Yeah, I agree. Okay. So we're left with Harley Race and Randy Savage versus Piper and Steamboat, which is probably the best, at this point in 1987, probably the best pairing final four that you could have.
Yeah.
So we got a lot of cheating from Harley and Savage, who actually worked pretty well together for two people who didn't really cross paths that much before the WWF. So, you know, they were pretty in sync in terms of holding people's tights and setting each other up for moves. Roddy Piper was great at being very feisty. He was very over with the Madison Square Garden crowd. This was going to be his last appearance at MSG. You already said that, I think.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So clearly the Madison Square Garden crowd knows that this is going to be his last match. They're very much so behind Piper. And so, like I said, with the infecting of suplexes, all of a sudden, Piper blocks a Harley suplex, and he's now suplexing Harley. And I'm like, when was the last time I saw Roddy Piper throw a suplex? And he does it again. He does it with the gut-wrench suplex.
Yeah, yeah.
When was Roddy Piper threw a gut-wrench suplex? So
I know.
Harley Race was definitely getting everybody with those suplexes. And so Steamboat comes in, a lot of karate. Slick is not happy about the excessive use of karate. It's professional wrestling on the marquee, he says. Well, he didn't say that, but that's what I say. And so Steamboat goes for the small package. Randy Savage rolls it over so that Harley Race eliminates Steamboat, setting you up for the 2-on-1 against Piper. Clearly Piper's last match. You get him up against the two top mid-card heels, probably your number 2 and number 3 heel of the company at the time. Without sacrificing Adonis, who you'll see at WrestleMania 3. It's actually really perfect booking. I didn't think of that until right now.
Yeah.
So. And so we start off, it's Piper unloads on the King, but eventually it comes up against him. You know, they start double teaming him. Piper's doing his best to be scrappy, to, you know, fight back, but the numbers game keeps getting to him. But of course, as you would expect, at some point, Savage nails Harley with the double axe handle off the top rope, and that's how that way Piper is able to eliminate him, because Savage really wasn't incapacitated. He kind of was just hanging out, but Harley had been taken out by Savage. So now we get Piper versus Savage, which is actually, I know they had a match in 1990, and they might have, and they obviously had the really depressing feud in WCW, I don't think up until this point they interacted, right? Because he'd been healed.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know. If they'd had a singles match, it didn't make tape before this. And after this, just the few scant matches in the WWF. So, very rare matchup.
Right. And I think it was a real treat for the Madison Square Garden crowd, because Randy Savage is clearly very over, and so was Roddy Piper.
Yeah.
And I love the spot where Savage is begging off, and Piper's like, "Oh, you want to shake my hand?" And then he takes his hand and bites Savage's hand. So Savage gets so pissed off, he spits on Piper. By the way, there should be more spit in professional wrestling. I think it's one of those things that would, like, if they spat on somebody, it'd probably give them a TV 14 rating.
Yeah.
Which is bullshit. Spitting is awesome heel heat.
Yeah.
Nobody likes to be spit on. Do you like to be spit on, Kelly?
No, of course not.
It's fucking gross. And so you totally want to knock the guy out. And so Piper's incensed. And it was just a really good good finishing sequence. Actually, Savage ends up taking control, kind of running it up towards the end with some near falls for himself before they collide heads. And Savage goes outside the ring. And I actually, even though I had seen this match before, I thought it was going to be a count out. But Piper was playing possum, and it actually led to Savage missing the elbow drop and Roddy Piper getting the win. A great, great match. Definitely, I would say probably top five of what we've seen so far on tag teams back again.
Yeah, I would say so too. I saw this match before. I loved it. It's got a lot of my, you know, all-time favorite guys in it. Savage, Steamboat, Piper. The finishing stretch is great.
It was one
of the very few pinfall losses that Savage had taken at this point in the WWF. So pretty rare. And this time he was the Intercontinental Champion still, and had been for a year. So very rare. I mentioned before, the crowd is just unbelievably hot for this. The baby faces are so over. Everybody's getting huge reactions. JYD gets a big chant right at the beginning. And then, yes, Slick on commentary gets in some good lines. He accuses JYD of being illiterate.
You know, when he said rules, I love how he said rules.
Yeah. Monsoon, you know, he can't read the rules of this match. And it's pretty hilarious. And then later on, I don't know, I have this quote down. I don't know what it was referring to, but Slick says, "Monsoon, have you gone stone crazy?"
I don't remember that one. I remember the part where JYD was supposed to get eliminated. And he goes, "Look, he's lost, Monsoon. He's lost. He's a lost dog." Something like that.
Yeah, we need more Slick on commentary. Anyway, back to the match. I loved the start. Just a big brawl with all six men. Got that over as being like a different sort of match. I don't think the WWF had done very many elimination matches before this. One that I know of was in the late 70s when Backlund was on the way to the top. And actually, it was the last match he had before defeating Superstar Graham for the world title. And it was in Madison Square Garden, where he came back from being, I believe, four on one down against four heels, and he beat four heels in a row. So that really put him over huge, of course. But other than that, I can't recall any prior to the Survivor Series era. So it was a fresh match, fresh for the crowd. It gets really good at the end. Piper, you mentioned the suplexes. Yeah, a couple suplexes, the gut wrench out of nowhere, really, that made me pop when I watched it earlier today. Piper, I think, was, you know, pretty hyped, this being his last appearance in New York. Wanted to give them a little something extra. There was a spot where Race takes a big bump over the top rope and ends up landing on a chair.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that?
Yes.
So when I was a kid, on the news in Calgary, they'd have the sports at the end, and they would do like a sports bloopers the week segment, you know, a quick couple minutes. And that spot made the sports bloopers real, which was funny because, you know, back then, I mean, I don't recall any other wrestling spots ever making the sports blooper reel, but that one I can clearly remember making it. And I remember seeing it and thinking, wow, because I hadn't seen that match before, and I could tell it was from Madison Square Garden and like who was involved, and I was like, whoa, geez, where did that match happen? Like, what was that on TV? And I don't, you know, I was too young to know that we couldn't get that in Calgary, and I was wondering how I missed it. So it was cool seeing that move. I still remember that years and years later. Yeah. Oh, Piper also busted a bulldog at one point.
Oh, yeah, he did. Yeah. That was the beginning of the final pairing.
Yeah. And there was a bunch of near falls at the end, kind of almost foreshadowing like Savage and Steamboat at WrestleMania 3.
Yeah, Savage is always a pretty big near fall fan.
Yeah, that's true.
You saw the Piper do the choking of Savage spot?
Yeah.
That Savage always does.
Yeah,
it's just, it was interesting. Piper was doing a lot of the other people's spots.
Exactly. It was like, of course, you're well aware recently of the accusations of Flair being accused of, you know, forcing guys to do.
You know, spots. I didn't want to bring it up because I was serious, but it was going through my head.
Yeah.
There were some other things that were going through my head, such as Harley's tendency to to bump a lot. And when he goes on offense, he doesn't really, there's no sort of struggle. He kind of just says, nope, I'm going on offense now.
I know.
I'm just, you know, these are things that Flair doesn't do. Just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
Probably why Flair might be the greatest wrestler of all time.
Yeah. But, no, it was like for Piper doing that. I remember thinking, you know, oh, that's like a Hulk Hogan spot, not a Piper spot. But I mean, it looked okay.
It looked fine.
Yeah.
I know. I mean, doesn't Savage have everybody to do it? I thought Steamboat did it.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Steamboat. Yeah. That's true.
Savage just liked doing that spot with everybody.
Yeah. Ever. Yeah. It was a bit of a stretch for Piper, but still.
It was. Piper seemed bigger for some reason in this match to me.
Yeah. I mean, he is sort of deceptively big. You know, in real life, he was a big guy. I mean, in a wrestling ring, he doesn't, with all the other big guys, he doesn't seem that big, but.
That's true. And Savage isn't, like, the biggest of the wrestlers.
No. Savage, yeah, exactly. Savage was, you know, smallish, a smallish heavyweight, actually. But, yeah, these two guys, two of my all-time favorites right here. So it was great to see almost like a mini match between the two of them to finish this off. And yeah, it was a super fun match. Great match. Super heated. I recommend everybody listening to track this one down. It's on Daily Motion. It's easy to find. Definitely check it out if you haven't already. So from there, we go from one elimination match to another. And we go from New York to Boston.
Woo! The real garden, baby.
Back to the garden. This is a few weeks later, March the 7th, and a different combination of individuals, a couple similar names, but the same rules apply. It's a six-man elimination match. On one side, we have the mighty Hercules Hernandez.
My first Hercules match.
Yes. At long last. It finally happened. That's one name you can check off.
You know what's weird, too, is like he looks – I've never actually – I don't think I've ever seen him before either. Like I know who he is. Like I know his – I could probably tell you his career. You know, he got his contract bought out by DiBiase. He was part of Power and Glory.
Yeah.
He has the full Nelson feud with Billy Jack Haynes. But to be honest with you, I don't think I've ever seen a picture of him.
Really?
So I had no idea what the hell the guy looked like. I didn't even think about it. And he doesn't look like what I thought he was going to look like. I thought he was going to be Tanner.
Huh. No, he's almost like Sheamus. He's very white.
Yeah. I was actually pretty shocked at how Hercules looked. So there you go.
Yeah. It's funny, the speaking of the different generations between you and I. I mean, Hercules was just a guy that was always around for like the first 5 or 6 years I was a wrestling fan. He was always in the WWF. Well, you get to see Hercules. And also on his team, we have Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff and adorable Adrian Adonis again. And on the other side, the baby faces, the heroes, we have Billy Jack Haynes. So this is another sort of matchup, of course, of feuding opponents. Billy Jack feuding with Hercules. Piper on this team, of course, feuding with Adonis. And last but not least, the incredible Hulk Hogan, who had kind of just wrapped up his feud with Paul Orndorff. But, of course, they couldn't have Andre on the team with WrestleMania 3 coming up because, of course, that was a one-time-only match of the century, and you weren't going to give it away prior to WrestleMania 3.
Right. Well, actually, there's two things that I thought was interesting because for some reason I was I don't know. I was going through a lot of WWF results this like past week or something. Mm-hmm. I'm going around the horn at this period of time. Hogan was going up against two guys. One was Hercules. Mm-hmm. And the other was Kamala. So I was kind of expecting Kamala to be in the in the match.
Yeah. That would have made more sense. And as we'll see in an upcoming match, that does happen.
Right.
Yeah, Kamala and Hercules. He had a match with Hercules on Saturday night's main event around this time.
Yeah, Hercules was early 1987. Hercules was like the opponent 1B. Mm-hmm. When he wasn't facing Kamala, he usually was facing Hercules.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So, yeah, this is a totally different match. Unfortunately, It's on Daily Motion in two parts, and in between part one and two, we're missing like 5 minutes, I would say.
Oh, okay.
Because there's a definite cut.
Yeah, there's a definite cut.
Yeah, and I'm just estimating 5 minutes, probably less than that. But so we don't have this match in complete, but what we do see is pretty fun. Another red hot electric crowd for this one.
Yeah, Boston crowd is fucking rocking. I wrote that note down.
Yeah, and we get the introductions of each wrestler in this one, which is cool because it gets bigger and bigger, like the reaction for each wrestler. And so that's really cool. So Marty, what did you think of this one?
Yeah, this is it's definitely different than the Madison Square Garden match, but this was still a lot of fun. The crowd, I mean, they were wicked into Piper.
Yeah.
I mean, Hulk Hogan is still a force of energy right through WrestleMania 3. There might have been, I think the drop off might be like right after WrestleMania 3, but right through WrestleMania 3 from 84 onwards, man, Hulk Hogan was just like electricity in like the human body. I don't know how he did it, but he was just like, he was the personification of electricity. It's just addictive to watch him. So Hogan plays to the fact that it's Roddy's last match in Boston. So he wants the, you know, Hogan's pantomiming that, you know, he wants the fat man, Adrian Adonis, to come in the ring to face Piper. But we end up with Hercules, which is, you know, Hercules. I mean, the guy was really like super unimpressive looking to me. I guess he was muscled up. So there was that.
Yeah, he's got a good physique.
I don't know. I just thought he was going to be better looking for some reason. I don't even know why I care about that. I mean, at the end of the day, I don't really care if a wrestler is good looking. I just thought Hercules is going to be a better looking dude. I don't know. I just, when I picture Hercules, like,
right,
you know, the Greek hero that became a god.
Yeah.
You know, I expect a little bit more bang for my buck.
Yeah, no, he's not Steve. Was it Steve Reeves or whoever played him in the 50s? Yeah.
Oh, I was thinking Kevin Sorbo.
Or him. Or Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Bring it back to my generation here. All right, so we end up with Billy Jack Haynes versus Herc, and there's really not much going on there. Adonis finally comes in, bumps around a little bit, so, you know, the match kind of gets going. Piper wants in, of course, so Adonis, you know, does the smart thing, tags out. We got some test of strength going on between Mr. Wonderful and Roddy Piper. Mr. Wonderful, I don't know who he pissed off in the back, but didn't he miss WrestleMania 3?
Yes. Yeah, he was left off.
Totally left off, which, you know, sucks. Hogan was great working over Mr. Wonderful. Like I said, just like so much energy in the way he was doing it. Billy Jack Haynes, who's obviously the low man on the totem pole in terms of the babyface, he gets bullied into the wrong corner, and they work him over. But, you know, Haynes actually has a little bit of giddy up in him. He was starting to chop, you know, some really good chops there. You know, him and Herc actually had a decent sequence coming out of the corner. At this point, this is where the cut is. Mm-hmm. And we actually skipped to Piper and Adonis being cut out, which was kind of weird. You know, it was Piper's last match. We saw him really emphasized.
Right.
In Madison Square Garden. For him to be de-emphasized here in Boston was interesting.
Yes. I don't know,
maybe Boston wasn't like too much of a Piper town.
Still, like, though.
I see like Philadelphia is like a huge Piper town. We're going to see that in a second.
Mm-hmm.
Philly's into that smart ass. In Boston, you know, smart asses don't play too well. We usually pop them in the face.
Mm-hmm.
We like. So now we're down to 2v2. It's Hogan and Mr. Oregon, Billy Jack Haynes, against Herc and Mr. Wonderful. Wonderful tries to distract Hogan with the chair. That way, Herc can blast Hogan. Orndorff, I thought, had a pretty great sense of urgency. I liked how he was running through those elbows a lot. We actually see that in a later match. So it was a good spot. I think it's a spot worth repeating, and he did a good job with it. You end up with the heel miscommunication, and Hogan ends up rolling up Mr. Wonderful. So Hercules is up against Hogan and Mr. Oregon over here, Billy Jack Haynes. So I'm not liking Herc's chances.
No.
So Herc over here ball shots Billy Jack, and he cradles him for the elimination. So there you go, baby. he was able to get one up, but Hercules versus Hogan, which was going around the horn at this time. So mm-hmm. This was the match that they know to do. It was just basically Hercules does a torch wreck. Love the torch wreck. That move needs to come back. Well, actually, I guess we have Nikki Bella's rack attack. So that always gets a ball game out of JBL, which I always like. that's one of the few times I mark out for commentary is the Nikki Bella's rack attack. I mean, you watch the pay per views.
Yeah.
The most protected move in professional wrestling right now. I've never seen somebody kick out of the rack attack.
Wow.
Yeah. So anyways, there you go. The women know how to protect their finishes. Hogan makes his comeback. I mean, that comeback was awesome. Hogan comebacks are just the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
No, that's not true. Jerry Lawler's comeback is I would actually put ahead of Hogan's, but yeah, they're comparable.
Oh yeah.
Even Heenan takes some bumps for Hogan, mm-hmm. and we get the Hogan pose down time, which Boston loves. I mean, Piper doesn't even come back out. It was clear. It was just the Hogan show.
Yeah, oh yeah, total Hogan show. I mean, going back to the entrances, Piper gets like a huge pop, but he doesn't get music, no bagpipes.
Yeah.
Nobody does, except, of course, Hogan gets the musical entrance, Real American.
That's because Boston is just filled with real Americans. We are America. I don't know if you know this, but we started the revolution. We freed America.
That's right. So Hogan's, he should have came out in a spirit of 76 get up or something. The three of them could have, as that famous painting with the fife player and the drummer and all that. That would have been a
problem. Oh, yeah, that actually would have been a good one. Yes. An interesting collection of people, though, yeah. I mean, well, I guess Piper worked Portland, too, and ended up living in Portland. So you kind of had, like, the Northwest connection there.
Yeah, that's right. He probably did help Billy Jack get into the WWF. Of course, we saw Hogan and Piper team in 86 in MSG, and they were a lot less chummy that time. Basically, they played up how, you know, they were basically, they still hated each other, but they were teaming. Here, they're basically friends now, and you know, all's been forgotten.
There was a little bit of a not a rocky start, but like they went out of their way to demonstrate at the very beginning that they would have continuity, and the announcers played that up.
Yeah, there was no teasing of dissension or anything like
right,
that.
Right, yeah.
So here's a few of my notes, random points. Monsoon claimed that Adrian Adonis and Jesse Ventura were former WWF tag team
champions. Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, which, of course, I have to point out that was not true. They were AWA tag team champions, not WWF. Adonis was WWF tag team champion with Dick Murdoch. North-South, not East-West.
East-West.
But that was a point that was brought up a few times over the years. They would claim that Adonis and Ventura were former WWF tag team champions. I remember it was confusing as a kid because I'd seen and I've told the story before, I saw the history of the tag team champions tape, and of course they're not on it. So I was always confused, you know, well, if they were the former tag team champions, why aren't they on that tape? Anyway, so yeah, we get to the cut. Roddy and Adonis are counted out, like you said. And yeah, Roddy's taken out of his last match kind of unceremoniously. And then I was almost positive that Billy Jack was going to be eliminated first. I mean, no offense, but he was definitely the low man on the totem pole in this one. I did like the finishing sequence when it came down to Billy Jack and Hogan and Orndorff and Hercules, with Orndorff getting pinned. And then, you know, there was some confusion. Orndorff hit the referee. And so this distracted the ref, and he didn't see that Hercules low-blowed Billy Jack behind his back. So that was a nice little bit. And then that got Billy Jack out of the way. And then we get Herc and Hogan. And, yep, the torture rack where he stupidly releases Hogan.
Yeah.
He did the same thing in that Saturday night's main event match I mentioned, where he actually, in that one, I think he thinks Hogan submitted, and he releases him and starts celebrating. Well, he does that, too, in this one, kind of. So, yes, Hercules may have been, you know, had the power of all these gods, but he didn't have much brain power. Didn't it?
He was not the god of wisdom.
No. Did not inherit the wisdom. So, yeah, Hogan gets the big finish. Then we get a pose down, which I haven't seen in quite a while, actually. And it was, you know, I've read this in various places. The pose down was, you know, for a lot of the fans, this was like what they came to see. Hogan was like this huge rock star wrestler attraction, where he attracted a lot of people that weren't into wrestling, but they were attracted by his charisma and this crazy musical pose down act that he had at the end. So yeah.
So I have a question. I mean, probably a stupid question, but maybe it's because I'm like a straight guy, so I don't get it. But like, was Hogan a sex symbol? Like, he seems ugly to me. Like, he wasn't treated like that. He wasn't treated as good looking like a Rick Martel.
No.
Or Steamboat was.
No, he wasn't. But he was, you know, it was kind of strange because later with Savage, there's definitely the tension between the three of them with Elizabeth, right?
So it's, yeah, but he's like, he acts like a weirdo in that thing.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. No. Well, Hogan was supposed to be kind of above that, I guess you would say. He was like a god amongst men, Superman.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I kind of get that feel. I was just curious, like, if women went goo-goo gaga over
Hogan. Yeah, like, as a shoot, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I'm sure, actually, when he attained that level of stardom, he probably had no trouble attracting, like, tons of ladies in every town that he went to. But no,
yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah.
Probably is. Yeah, I just don't know. It's a weird thing that I've never really thought about, was the sexualization of Hulk Hogan.
I smell a podcast topic, perhaps.
I don't know. To use a term that Steve Austin used, I don't feel like he got the chick pop.
Yeah, we could maybe explore that in depth in a 5-part miniseries.
That's another person. I mean, Steve Austin's a little weird because right. He's the whole. With the abusing women thing, at least that one instance we know about.
Yeah.
But was Steve Austin a sex symbol? Once again, doesn't seem like a very good-looking dude. Clearly The Rock. I mean, I know The Rock is, like, a huge hit because, like, my sisters and, like, my aunt loves The Rock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I don't know. Interesting thing. Like, these famous men, like Steve Austin, Hulk Hogan, aren't conventionally attractive. They probably just do well because they're, you know, superstars.
That's a good point. That's a good comparison between the two of them that I hadn't thought before. But, yes, that'll be a podcast for some undetermined time in the future.
Okay.
I promise. No. Anyway, this was, yeah, a fun match. Super heated. Just, I loved the whole beginning, like, all the way through with the entrances. And then at the end, the pose down. I loved just the whole atmosphere, this whole thing start to finish was really cool. Yeah, another Piper farewell tour match, so you had another just amazing crowd for this. And, you know, not as fun or as great as the MSG elimination match, but still pretty cool nonetheless. So now we've gone to New York, we've gone to Boston, so I guess
it's, where else is left?
Yeah, only natural we head to the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia.
The third great city on the loop, by the way.
The Spectrum, March 14th, and this is not an elimination match, but it's another interesting pairing of individuals. This is a straight-up tag match. On one side, we have Kamala, Ugandan giant, and Paul Orndorff. So this is that's a pretty strange pairing, those two guys. And on the other side, we have, fresh off their Boston teaming, Hulk Hogan and Roddy Piper. And yeah, interesting pairings again. Kamala and Hogan working programs at this time, as has been mentioned. And so this one we have, instead of Adonis, we have Orndorff. Kamala and Adonis would have been an interesting visual team
A lot of makeup in that match.
Yes. It's too bad that they didn't run with that one. So Orndorff gets the substitute kind of role again here. Of course, he has history with both Hogan and Piper, going back several years. And we got another, you know, nuclear hot crowd here. I'm not sure which of the three is the hottest. It's just a really cool great atmosphere. The ring announcer introduces Orndorff as Paul, Mr. Orndorff.
I didn't catch that.
But then he quickly corrects himself. But
oh, he does.
Okay. Yeah. And yeah, just this is a fun one too, Marty. What'd you think?
So I got a question for you.
Yeah.
And I want to know if this is because of my age or if this is a real thing. So up until like recently, not recently, I mean like since joining Pro Wrestling Only, mm-hmm. I did not even realize that Kamala was in the WWF in the 1980s.
Oh,
right. So is that like just an age thing, or I just don't feel like they ever promote Kamala as a part of their history?
Yeah, I guess that'd be an age thing, but it's true. Yeah, they don't really talk about him a lot. He had a run in 86, 87. Actually, he had a run in 84 that's even, less known.
I didn't know about that one.
Yeah, he was managed by Freddie Blassie. Oh,
I remember that, actually, because I watched the match against Andre.
Yes, they have a famous cage match.
I wrote about it. It's like the world's... it's like the world's most like minimalistic match.
Yes, it was on a few tapes. They played.
And told a very good story for two people who couldn't really move or not move, but couldn't really do anything.
Yeah, but that run didn't last too long, I don't think. And then this run was maybe about a year, and then he came back again.
Right in the 90s.
In 92, and was a heel, and then turned babyface. And was managed by Slick, who also had turned babyface and became like a preacher, which was based on his real life. But that didn't last too long. But yeah, Kamala, kind of a forgotten man. Him and Hogan, though, they drew some big money. And their matches, if you've seen them, I've seen the Boston match too. It was good, but the Madison Square Garden matches are really good.
I think I only saw one, and yeah, it was probably one of the better Hogan matches I've seen in the 80s.
Yeah, I totally recommend it, especially, I think it's like a basically a street fight death match.
Yeah, it's like a Desert Storm, not Desert Storm, but it's like Sergeant Slaughter.
Yeah, No Holds Barred or whatever you want to call it.
I kind of remember him like throwing powder.
No, Hogan cheats. Well, it's not cheating in that match, but he throws powder and has the war paint on. Cool match. Kamala is kind of
So do you think it's because of the nature of the character?
Yeah, that's part of it probably. I mean, it was some people would say blatantly racist, yes.
Well, I mean they did do Umaga.
Yep, that's true. And I mean it's not like they haven't done others since and still to this day. But I don't know,
just a weird guy that like actually played a pretty big role, but just doesn't. You don't think of him as a part of the WWF, even though he was there multiple times.
He also was part of an iconic wrestling magazine cover from his run. This run in 86, 87, I believe it was Sports Review Wrestling. It was one of the after mags. I'm sure you've seen this, Marty, where it's Kamala with Hogan's head on a spear. Photoshopped.
Oh yes, I have seen that.
Bloody Hogan head on a spear. That's
pretty awesome.
One of the more memorable covers from that era.
I got another question for you. I feel like you know the answer to this one too. So what's the difference between kimchi and Friday?
Oh, that's a good question. This came up on a podcast I did with Steven and Parv over a year ago. Friday was the original handler because Kamala first debuted in Memphis.
Right, I know. Yeah, Jerry Lawler tells the story.
Yeah,
a Stone Cold podcast about he drew like the crescent moon on Kamala's stomach, and he thought it was banana, right? Isn't that like?
I believe Lawler came up with the character.
Right, it was based off the Ugandan president. Something?
Yeah, Idi Amin, who was like a dictator who killed a lot of his citizens in the 1970s, Uganda. And Kamala debuted in Memphis. He wrestled in Mid-South and Texas also, or in the early days. And Friday was his handler then. Friday, slightly different gear. He wore shorts instead of long pants. That's how you can tell Friday from Kimchi. I forget who played Friday. I've read it before, but off the top of my head, I can't remember. And then later, the second run here is when Kimchi debuted, and it was played. He was played by Steve Lombardi.
I remember hearing that.
Yeah. And Kimchi, the name. I mean, it's a food, right?
It's Korean food.
Yeah. So I don't know. There's some inside joke, but yeah, that's basically the difference between the two.
Well, don't even get me started on Kamala and Kim Mala and Kim Mala 2 and all that crap. Right. I don't know what's there either.
Well, he originally in Memphis, he was Kim Mala with an I.
Okay.
And then Kim Mala 2? Yeah, I'm not sure about that, but that's a Memphis thing as well.
Wait, you've heard of Kim Mala 2?
Yes, I've heard of him.
It's a different person?
I'm assuming so. Yeah, it must be. But yeah, that's something that I do not know for sure. Anyway, any other questions I can answer for you, Marty?
No, I think I'm good on Kamala.
All right. So what did you think of this match in Philly?
I thought Kamala was really good at timing his bumps. Don't you think Kamala's really good at that stuff?
Yeah, he is good.
I think that's probably what he's best for, is the weeble wobble but don't fall down selling.
Yes. Yeah.
I think that's his big thing. Though he bumps, when he does bump, he takes big bumps. Mm-hmm. Like, he took that big bump to the floor. The other thing was, I thought this was the crowd that was the hottest for Piper. Like, you could hear the Roddy chants.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, you know, a lot of just, you know, general, like, fun, energetic stuff. You know, Piper just coming, like, flying across to deck Kamala, even though Kamala's huge. I mean, just really, I think in just one, like, simple sequence really describes who Roddy Piper was as a professional wrestler. And then, so Mr. Wonderful, you know, he gets involved. He pokes the eyes. Piper pokes him in the eyes, which is Piper's trademark spot. I mean, we should have brought that up, but the two fingers into the eyes.
Yeah.
And then Piper and, Hogan do the can-can line.
Yes.
With Kamala taking him down. And then Hogan slams Kamala. Huge pop for that.
Yeah.
Kamala finally, you know, as you would expect, Kamala tries to, you know, bully Roddy into the heel corner. He's got the big overhand chop, which is like Kamala's big move. You got the Orndorff chin lock, some false tag action. I love, you know, Hogan's overacting is like the greatest thing.
Oh, ever. Yeah. I was going to bring this up, but you go ahead.
Oh, my God. Well, you can talk about it right after. We don't have to get into the finish. We can go. We'll circle back to that. But Hogan. Sorry. I don't know how to describe it, but the way he comes into the ring and he's looking at the crowd with his hands and stuff. I'm trying to think of what, like, 19, like, 40s or 30s. I don't know.
20s. He's like a silent movie actor.
It's like 1920s silent movie. See, I'm from 1989. Anything before 1950s. But, like, didn't he look like he looked like he was in Looney Tunes or something.
Yeah, totally.
It was incredible how much like he looked like a cartoon.
Yep, he totally was. It's amazing. That's one of the most charming things about him, or one of the things that makes him so over, is his connection with the crowd, how he looks at them and draws them in with his hands and the motions. And but here, yeah, he was just so over the top, and it was just amazing.
I know, he's just such a ham, but you can't help but love him.
I know, so hammy. But it's like the furthest person away in the arena would know exactly what emotion, you know, Hogan was trying to convey, and everything is done like very, you know, no subtlety at all. But
no, and you know what? In 2015, I popped for it.
So yeah, I totally popped for it.
It was timeless.
Yeah.
So I thought actually they built to a very dramatic hot tag where Kamala just like kind of like kept tackling Roddy Piper. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, could he ever get away from like the creature from the Black Lagoon type thing? Yeah. Kamala hits his big splash, but Hogan yanks him off. Orndorff does a nerve hold. We get another false tag. Piper finally gets under the legs. We get the hot tag to Hogan. We get the Hogan Hulk up. Kamala breaks it up. Kamala and the camera fucks up at the end. But the gist of it is, from what I gathered, was Kamala overhand chopped Mr. Wonderful and Hogan got the pin. Am I correct?
I think so, yeah. They missed the spot where he got, where Orndorff got hit. Yeah, that's right.
They had a rare Crockett WCW moment there.
Yeah, it was. Oh, man. Well, yeah, this was super fun, too. The beginning with Hogan and Piper coming out together, there was just like Batman and Superman basically entering. The crowd was just, what a pop for that. It was just an all-time pop for those two coming out. You're right about Philly with the Roddy love, just a huge Roddy chant. This was a really cool match. Like a great shine at the beginning. You called it the can-can lie. That was the double big boot from Hogan and Piper. That's a move that Hogan would incorporate various times in the future with different people.
Yes. Yes, I can think of some other can-can moments.
One of his stock moves. And yeah, Piper plays face and peril for the whole match, and we've gone over Hogan's pantomime. His selling of the missed tags is just fantastic. I want to get a screen grab of there's one that I have in my mind where he's just like trying to sell, like, how could you miss that? How did you miss that, referee? It's just a,
you know what? I can picture it as clear as day right now. Yeah. Him in my head doing it. So yeah, it's just, if you can get the GIF or GIF or whatever.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah, I'll get that. Because that was just like, that sums up Hogan. Right there. It was just amazing facial expressions. Yeah, Kamala was fun. He did like a really cool leapfrog. Was it in this match? No, sorry.
No, the
coming match. Okay, so we'll save
spoilers.
That. Yeah, we'll save that for...
I guess this whole show is spoilers, really.
Yeah, basically. But nonetheless, yeah, he was pretty athletic, agile at this time. It's great to see like a big man who's agile like that. That's like one of my favorite type of wrestler. And yeah, just another fun match. Hogan and Piper got to celebrate together and leave together. So each of these matches had a different, you know, feel to it, different ending, different sort of celebration and stuff. So it's cool. One note I want to make for Titans of Wrestling fans out there, no Super 8 in attendance.
I was going to ask if, once you said that, I was like, oh, Super 8 in attendance?
No. I looked, and I've been looking in the other Philly matches we've watched from this time, and sad to say, I don't think Super 8 is attending shows in 1987 at the Spectrum. So.
Well, that's because he was boycotting Hogan. He was going over to the Civic Center and watching
Hogan. There's a positive point from you, Marty. I was going to say that he died of a heart attack, but no, you're right. He jumped ship and joined the NWA that was going on sometimes, I believe, at the same night in Philadelphia. At the Civic Center, like you said. So yeah, he jumped to the NWA. Let's say that's what happened to Super 8. A happy ending for Super 8.
A happy ending.
So now, after three consecutive just crazy heated matches in three...
The Roddy Piper farewell tour. I kind of feel like we should have watched Piper versus Adonis at this point.
Yeah, basically.
Because we watched pretty much the entire farewell tour.
Yeah, we saw the big three cities say goodbye to Roddy.
Maybe it's that match tonight now.
Yeah. And I said I was going to do a Piper tribute podcast someday. Well, until that happens, this will be my Piper tribute podcast. This was Piper's farewell, and we can say goodbye to Piper, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of been weird. Like, he's not gotten as much... I don't want to say fanfare. What's the word I'm looking for?
Yeah.
Isn't attention as Dusty did.
No, or Randy Savage. Yeah.
Which was surprising to me. If you had asked me, before they died, who the bigger star was in, like, mainstream,
right.
I would have thought Piper was.
I think
longer stay with the WWF.
Yeah, I think timing had a lot to do with it. I think if Dusty hadn't died, you know, a month before, it would have been a bigger deal. I think people were a little, they didn't want to go back to the morning right away.
The other thing I was thinking was Dusty was currently working for the WWE, whereas Piper wasn't.
Yeah.
And Dusty has two children who wrestle.
Yeah.
So I think that explains why the WWE wasn't as into it. But I also felt like just internet fans in general weren't. I thought Dusty got a bigger reaction.
He did. No, he totally did. And I think that's part of it. And I think, yeah, it was just too soon after Dusty died.
To be honest with you, I mean, I don't know if this sounds kind of weird, but I sometimes forget Piper died.
Yeah.
I kind of forgot until you told me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no. When Dusty died, I got together with a friend and we watched Dusty promos and matches like the day after he died, I think. But with Piper.
Yeah, no, I remember finding out where I was at work and needing to go to the bathroom because I thought I was going to cry.
Yeah. Yeah. That was very emotional. That hit me hard. And Piper was a guy that I loved. He was definitely one of my all-time favorite wrestlers. And yeah, well, you know, eventually I will give Roddy the tribute that he.
Well, if you need a person to fly with you, Kelly, I'll be happy to fly with you.
Cool. Well, we'll say that'll be coming at some point in the future.
Do you watch pro wrestling? Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO. PTBN Podcast Network. That's the pro wrestling only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile on Bad Street with Chris Zellner.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows. Not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
Join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds, wrestling culture.
Go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
You can get the full archive of Good Will Wrestling with Good Old Will from Texas.
There's tag teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brainbuster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWO-PTBN Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it.
So now we're headed to, of all places, Kitchener, Ontario. Where? An unusual location.
Is this named after Lord Kitchener?
Oh, probably. I'm not sure who Lord Kitchener was, but...
Hold on. I might have just said like a genocidal maniac.
It's okay. It's in Ontario.
keep going. Yes, he was definitely. I knew he was definitely like one. He was like Cecil Rhodes type person with like the pith helmet and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Keep going. I'm just gonna
okay. So Kitchener, Ontario. Not sure how often they tape TV here. Not very often that I know of. I'm not sure why they were taping TV here. Maybe it was just for a Canadian only show. So anyway, the reason we're looking at this match or this city is because there was an unusual teaming in this city, this match. We have, on one side, not an unusual team, Demolition. Dun-dun-dun-dun-na-na. Dun-dun-dun-dun-na-na. We even get that music.
That's true, we do, yes.
The lyric version of the Demolition theme is plays their way to the ring. So that's not an unusual team. No, the unusual team is on the other side, where we have B. Brian Blair and S.D., or for this match, S.B. Jones, teaming together. And to make it just perfect, S.B. Jones is wearing Killer B trunks and has become apparently an honorary member of the Killer Bees. Apparently Brunzell was sick or hurt. They did team the night before in a place called California, Pennsylvania.
Yes, that is a real place. There's also a Indiana, Pennsylvania. And there's a weird school that is like, it's like the University of Indiana, Pennsylvania. Actually, it might be the University of California, Pennsylvania. It's very strange.
Yeah, Pennsylvania has some weird names for towns. There's a real strange one in Pennsylvania that I can't. Oh, King of Prussia.
Oh yes, that is a common one.
Yeah,
we have my company does business there.
Right. I was always fascinated by that name. It's so unusual. So yes, some unusual names in Pennsylvania. So yes, these two teamed the night before against the same team, Demolition, and they would never team up again. They actually teamed together in 1984 once against Murdoch and Adonis, actually, in Chicago. But that was before the Killer Bees existed. So,
oh man, Cal, you're bringing that historical knowledge.
You know I had to do that.
But I would also like to point out there is a California University of Pennsylvania.
Yes, I noticed that today when I was looking up, because I saw the result and I just wanted to make sure it was correct. Yeah, that's interesting.
And also, I don't want to leave people hanging. Plus, this is a demolition match, so procrastination is required. And so, Lord Kitchener, he conquered Sudan for Britain. He also fought in the Second Boer War, which was Britain against the Dutch colonists in South Africa.
That's right.
Britain ended up winning that. He was the Secretary of War during the First World War for the United Kingdom. And the reason why he's famous is because he was like the Uncle Sam of America, and he has recruiting posters that says, "Your country needs you."
Oh, yeah. The Uncle Sam of the United Kingdom, you mean?
Yes, the Uncle Sam of the United Kingdom.
Right.
He says, yeah. Fun fact, Uncle Sam is a real person. His name was Sam Wilson, and he was born in my hometown of Arlington, Massachusetts.
Interesting. Wow, we're getting all kinds of interesting information for you listeners tonight. This match, I don't know, I stumbled upon it when I was just looking for possible matches, and as soon as I saw SDSB in the Killer B trunks, I knew I had to shoehorn this match in somehow.
You foisted it upon me. Like, they've been foisting pumpkin upon me all fall. Pumpkin spice, pumpkin cheesecake. They had pumpkin pizza. It was so much foisting. I don't know why you got to foist this demolition match on me when we didn't need to watch it.
Well, you know me. I like my unusual matchups in unusual settings. We have the unusual setting of Kitchener. We have the unusual team. We have, I mean, I just love that he went so far as to wear, I guess, Brian Blair's spare Killer B trunks.
Fun fact. This is my first Special Delivery Jones match.
Oh, wow. The firsts just keep on coming, folks.
I don't think I've ever seen SD Jones before.
Really?
Well, I don't think I have. I don't think I have.
He has.
Somehow I knew he was black, though, so maybe I have seen him.
Well, he is, to this day, he still has the best Johnny Rods match I've ever seen. I've been hunting to find one that surpassed it, but him and Rods, Jones and Rods, had a pretty good match in 1981 at Madison Square Garden.
You know what it was with the Hercules thing? Not to double back. Because Hercules' last name is Hernandez, I think I just expected him to be, like, Latin.
Right.
So I think that's what threw me for a loop.
Yeah. And they dropped the Hernandez thing after a few months in the WWF, too.
clearly, I mean, your name, if your last name's Fernandez, clearly you could be white. I'm not saying you can't. I'm just saying. I expected him to be that way. Yeah. I expected him to be, you know, debonair and suave.
Yeah, and no, he's none or was none of them.
He's pretty bland.
He was bland. Yeah. So okay, yeah, this one we'll consider this the comedy match before the main event. Yeah, SB Jones, baby, Marty, what did you think of this?
Demolition match is a demolition match is a demolition match.
Yeah.
So it's early on. So anybody who's not seen a demolition match, I was actually pretty surprised when Blair hit a crossbody on Axe and he went down. Demolition is usually known for their doubling up. The babyfaces usually need to double up their moves in order to take Demolition off their feet. So That was an interesting little thing. We actually got a nice little clash of titans between SD Jones and Smash. You saw how, like, you know, they were kind of bouncing off each other. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, not bad.
Jeez, Kelly. Getting a little excited. So anyways, we go with the Heart Foundation.
Transition. Yeah.
It buries the knee into Blair's back. Demolition controls with a combination of quick tags, club wrench, and locks and cheap. We get some false tags. Eventually, he tags out to SD Jones. SD Jones, I guess, has a really good headbutt, but he opts to go with the sleeper instead. Axe clobbers him with a clothesline. Smash lands on top. That was the match.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there wasn't too much to it.
For mask confusion.
Well, we'll get to that.
What do you mean?
Well, we won't get to it, actually, but Monsoon made a comment that right before the match started that obviously they couldn't do the false tagging thing.
Oh, right? Yes.
And it's basically, you know, applied, well, of course they can't. I mean, he doesn't outright say it, but yeah, he subtly got that in. Like, yeah, the mass confusion wouldn't work.
For some reason, I thought there was a special bonus match that I didn't watch that you were going to show me where they actually did mass confusion between SD Jones and Brian Blair.
No, it was just Monsoon's subtle racist comment. Mass confusion would not work with SB and B. Brian.
I think it would have been a great comedy spot.
Yes. If this truly was a comedy match, it would have been perfectly acceptable. Speaking of strange matchups, on commentary, we have Monsoon and Billy Red Lions. Do you know who?
Is that who it was?
Yes.
I was like, is that Lord James Blair's? But I was like, it couldn't be Lord James Blair's.
No. So you know, you've heard of Billy Red Lions, Marty?
I've heard of Billy Red Lions. I don't know what he looks like.
Right. Well, if you were Canadian,
that's the theme of it, right?
If you were Canadian growing up in the 80s and early 90s, you'd have seen a lot of Billy Red Lions, because for our version of Superstars, which was called Maple Leaf Wrestling, because that was the time slot it inherited, the old Maple Leaf Wrestling Toronto program. Anyway, Billy Red would do the interviews on that show that hyped the house show matches. So these were specifically just for the Canadian markets, of course. And Billy Red's catchphrase was, "Don't you dare miss it." And that, he would end every interview segment with that. So if you're a certain age who grew up in Canada, Billy Red Lions, and a wrestling fan, of course, Billy Red Lions would be a name that you would recall and a face you would recall. He was actually an accomplished wrestler. He teamed with Red Bastine, who is a pretty famous wrestler. And
yes,
they were the Flying Redheads in the 60s and 70s. Lyons was big in Toronto, but I think he was a big star in certain parts of the States too, Texas. And then for years, he would be always part of brawls, breaking up brawls, like when they would have agents and referees come out on WWF TV to break up brawls. Lyons would be one of the guys often breaking up brawls. For years after.
Oh.
But yeah, here he is. This obviously was some sort of Canadian-only taping, I believe, with him on commentary, too. To the match, yeah, no, there wasn't much here. I wasn't expecting much. Blair, though, again, impressed me.
You just love B. Brian Blair.
I've come to love B. Brian Blair. Who would have thought?
I mean, I'm glad you can express that openly. But I remain kind of unimpressed by the Mike Pham lookalike.
I know you're not on the same page as me when it comes to Blair, but I think he plays. You know, he does. He's good as a face in peril. He worked the hardest of the four in this match, I would say for sure.
He definitely, if you were to do your payout by how hard somebody worked, you would get the highest payout.
Yeah, like Demolition basically phoned this one in. They were all headlocks, headlocks, chin locks, bear hugs.
Did they get the front face lock in there?
I think they had a brief front face lock, thankfully.
That really kills the Kelly crowd dead.
Thankfully, it was only brief. But yeah, they were dull in this one. There was one funny spot, I just have to mention this, that I don't think I've ever seen before in a match, where Blair tagged SD Jones, but the referee disallowed the tag. Did you catch this? I think because, I don't know, Jones wasn't holding the tag rope.
So was that at the beginning of the match?
Yeah. So he
and the commentators were like, what the fuck?
So he orders Jones to go back out, and then they just redo the tag again. It was a total meaningless spot. Like, the ref was, like, really strict on maintaining kayfabe, I guess. I don't know why.
That ref deserves a bonus, because that is what you should do.
Yeah, he enforced the tag rope rule.
Good for him.
Strictly enforced. Anyway, that was a funny little spot. But yes, it was a nothing match. Not seeing too much from the demos early on. I guess we've only seen them a couple times. So.
Oh, the Islanders match was good, but...
Oh, right. Yes, I forgot about that one.
That was very good. But the other two matches.
Oh, yeah, that was the previous match we'd seen. I thought it was the Killer Bees.
No, we watched a crappy one.
Yeah, it was them and the Islanders. Did we watch a demo's Killer Bees? Not yet.
I can't remember what the hell we watched, but whatever we watched involved a lot of clubbering.
Yeah, it was. I think it was the Islanders. You're right, yeah. No.
The Islanders match was good, but there's a second match.
Okay, then that must have been the Killer Bees one.
I can't remember who that was. Yeah. See, that's how memorable it was.
Yeah, but no, better things for them to come, hopefully.
Is there? There's Rockers matches.
Yeah, there's Rockers matches.
Rockers.
And so we leave Kitchener, Ontario. We leave SB Jones and his bee trunk forever to go to... Actually, not too far away, Buffalo, New York.
I was just in Niagara Falls for Columbus Day or Canadian Thanksgiving.
Oh, really? Cool.
Yes, I was in Niagara Falls. I went to Canada.
Nice.
As I usually do. My buddy lives in Niagara Falls. And we also went to Buffalo. We partied in Buffalo a little bit.
Cool. So Buffalo's an okay town?
No, not really. Not cool. My buddy lives there. American side of Niagara Falls is pretty lame. Canadian side of Niagara Falls is really nice.
Right, it's the honeymoon destination side. I've never been to Niagara Falls.
That was my fourth time going.
Cool.
I would say, the coolest time is actually in the winter, even though it's really fucking cold, because it kind of ices over, so it gives a cool effect to the falls.
Right.
But if you want to just be comfortable, you might actually another good period was because I went in October this time. The foliage was fucking beautiful. So I thought that really made the trip worthwhile. Cause then I had the foliage plus the falls. Getting real sensitive right now.
Yes, you are. Well, hey, I like good foliage too. So I will get to there eventually. I know I will. So anyway, yes, Buffalo. And the date on this one is June the 2nd, so actually the day after the previous match. This is a famous taping because on the same taping, the Honky Tonk Man defeats Ricky Steamboat for the Intercontinental title, which, again, for people who grew up in the 80s watching wrestling, was a seminal moment or a dark moment for a lot of fans.
Hey, what the fuck moment?
Yeah, I... came out of nowhere, that's for sure. Steamboat had only been the champ for a couple months after chasing it forever, and Honky beat him.
I've never seen that match.
Yeah, well, it's very short. It's only like 3 or 4 minutes long.
I don't think I've ever seen a Honky Tonk Man singles match.
Wow. Well,
I know what he looks like.
You do?
He looks like Elvis.
I was hoping you knew what he looked like.
So I knew that.
Yes, he looks like an Elvis impersonator, the name suggests.
So, yeah, I knew going into it what he looked like. But no, you know what's a good six-man tag that we'll have to check out is Randy Savage and Strikeforce.
Yeah.
In a cage against Honky Tonk Man and the Heartbreakers.
Right, yep. I definitely have that one penciled in for an upcoming episode.
So there you go. There's an example of me watching a Honky Tonk Man match. But still, I don't think I've ever watched a singles match.
Yeah, well, there's not a ton of memorable ones out there. Well, memorable, yes, when Warrior squashed them in 30 seconds. That's super
memorable. I still don't think I've watched that match. I'll watch that match tonight. It's only 30 seconds.
Yeah, you can squeeze that one in.
I guess. I should probably watch the title change at some point, the Steamboat one.
Yeah, well, that's a quickie as well.
Yeah, I'll have to watch that at some point.
So anyway, yeah, so famous taping that this match comes from. And this match is, on one side, we have Kamala again. And the aforementioned Honky Tonk Man teaming with him. Strange pairing, definitely. And on the other side, definitely a unique pairing. We have the Incredible Hulk Hogan again, and we have Coco Beware subbing for Jake the Snake Roberts, I might add.
Oh, is that why Jake the Snake was out?
Yeah. Why
the hell was he subbing for a man who was there?
Yeah, well, because Jake was legit hurt, and of course Jake was feuding with Honky Tonk Man. That was the connection originally. So yeah, I guess he was still there, but he couldn't wrestle. I know he was legit hurt from the guitar shot that Honky gave him, setting up their match at WrestleMania 3, because he hit him with a real guitar, not a gimmicked guitar.
What a fucking moron.
And then Jake had neck issues, ever since from that.
Of course, it's an axial load. I mean, it was stupid.
It was very dumb. So Jake does come to the ringside and brings Damien with him. This is a very crowded ringside for this match.
holy shit, it was.
Jake, Damien, Kimchi, Curtis Iaquea, the Wizard. Isn't he there? Oh, no, it's Mr. Fuji.
No, it's Fuji.
Right.
Wizard at the
Yeah,
the
Wizard pack. Was gone by this point. Wizard was there for the Philly match.
Yes.
Fuji and Jimmy Hart. So it's almost...
Wait, what's the story with the Wizard?
Well, he was Kamala's...
The Wizard.
Manager. Yeah, I mean, Curtis Iaquea was a famous wrestler.
Right, from Hawaii.
67, Father from Hawaii.
Curtis Iaquea.
Was he? I don't know if that was legit.
Was he? I actually, you know what? I just threw that out there.
Yeah. I think that was a work. But anyway, yeah, he was a big star in a lot of areas.
Still real to me, damn
it. He was a big star in a lot of areas. Even had a run. He was Baron Ciclunas' tag partner in a title run in 1972, tag title run.
He was the master of the Dungeon of Doom.
Yes, later on.
He unleashed the Yeti.
He did.
The Yeti.
So he had a brief stint here in WWF where he was managing Kamala. He also managed Sika.
Oh, yes. Wizard and Kamala, Sika.
Yeah, they teamed a few times. And then, I don't know, Wizard just vanished and Fuji basically took over his charges. And so, yeah, and the only thing missing is Frankie. I don't think Coco's pet parrot, Frankie, was at ringside. That would have made it just perfect. He would have had everything at ringside. And this is taken, speaking of unusual TV tapings, this is taken from International Wrestling Challenge from Australia. So we have a very unusual commentary team, so unusual that I only know one of the two people commentating. One is the living legend Bruno Sammartino, of course.
Yes.
Getting to talk a lot more than he would when he was teamed with Vince and Jesse at the same time. And his partner, I do not know who it was. I thought he said Dino at one point, and then I also thought Bruno referred to him as Greg or Craig at one point.
Well, I don't know. I have no idea.
He had like a vague accent that I can't place. So if you don't know, I don't know. Anybody out there, it's pretty obscure. A bit of trivia. I Googled it and couldn't figure it out. So Bruno and a mystery commentator here.
Harv will find out for us.
Yeah, maybe.
Harv is the ultimate commentary.
Yeah, he is the commentary geek. So this is a fun match. I really liked it a lot. This has got a big-time Memphis flavor to it with Coco, Kamala, and Honky Tonk Man, who was Wayne Ferris, of course, in Memphis.
Hogan passed through.
And Memphis. Hogan, yeah, Hogan did a few tours in his early years in Memphis.
Yeah, wasn't like his second territory in Memphis?
Could have been.
He was with the Foolers for the first one.
Yeah, Hogan spent the first four or so years entirely in the South working. Even with Hogan, you have... And then Jimmy Hart, of course, at ringside.
Jimmy Hart, yes.
Huge manager in the Memphis territory. So, yeah, this has got a Memphis flair to it. Marty, what'd you think of it?
I think this is the first time ever a kickout was a transition to a heat segment.
Interesting.
Do you think that, the kickout was the transition to the heat segment, wasn't it?
Well, remind me of the spot again.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll just go through the beginning and then I'll get to the heat transition. It was just craziness to me. So, hot start, the end of the baby faces clear the ring. Bad guys don't know what to do with themselves. Honky Tonk Man having a hard time communicating with Kamala. He's trying to, do his little. I'm just kidding. He wasn't shaking his hips at Kamala trying to figure out. I thought that would be funny though. Honky Tonk Man tries to communicate with Kamala via hip shaking, and Kamala responds back with slapping his belly. Like that's like the spot I would have like recommended them do.
Yeah.
If I was in charge of laying out the match, but I wasn't. Like I said before, Kamala's really good at timing his bumps, so. He's not going to bump for fucking Coco, beware. It's just hilarious. Coco's doing all the babyface moves, and Kamala's like, come on, motherfucker. I ain't bumping for your little bitch ass. I bump for the big man, Hogan.
Yeah.
Hogan doing the Birdman was hilarious.
Yeah.
I feel like Hogan was like, he's like the dad who's like probably embarrassing to his children, but is just right. Like super hilarious to everyone else around him.
Yeah.
He's just so funny.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Kamala can't catch Coco Beware, who's too fast. So Kamala's like, all right, do a test of strength. Coco, unlike every other babyface ever, is like, homie, don't play that. He tags in fucking Hogan, who's like, all right. And then Kamala's like, oh, shit, I didn't want that. So he runs out. And then... of course, Kamala's terrified of snakes. Because if you're a huge man like Andre or Kamala or whatever, you're just scared shitless of snakes. And the crowd was really hot for that spot, weren't they? That was up there for one of the hotter spots.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So then Hogan goes for the test of strength again. And then Hogan, you know what? I tend to defend babyface cheating, fighting fire with fire. But this was uncalled for. He was a total dick. He goes for the test of strike, and he just kicks him in the gut. I'm just like, what an asshole. And so then he's kicking ass, and then he's just like, all right, Coco, take care of my light work. So Coco comes in. Coco doesn't even do a move, all right? Doesn't even do a move. He's like, holy shit, I'm going to get a fucking pinfall right here, right now. This is my big break. So Coco just dives on Kamala. Kamala fucking press slams him off from the ground in a kick out, right? And Coco sells it like it was a fucking move. Mm-hmm. It was the darndest thing I've ever seen. So we successfully had a transition to a heat segment off a kick out. It was craziness. So then from there... they just like Kamala's just like choke, stomach claw, cane. I don't think Honky Tonk Man did shit in this match.
No, he usually doesn't.
He doesn't. This guy is what a freeloader. So There is a awesome Kamala big boot, or big foot, I guess, because he doesn't wear a boot. And so then Coco and Kamala are like, all right, let's do the normal crisscross sequence, you know, drop down, leapfrog, tackle, hip toss type thing where they, you know, every fucking – this is like basic wrestling 101. So Kamala's like, all right, I'm game for it, Coco. So they do it. Kamala goes for the leapfrog, but fucking Coco doesn't finish the stupid sequence. He's like, you dumb motherfucker. And then he drop kicks him. But Kamala's like, you dumb motherfucker, I ain't gonna bump for you. This was like, I thought this match was hilarious. I'm laughing the whole time during this match. So Kamala tags out to Honky. Of course, Honky is totally worthless, but he'll bump for anybody. So he misses the elbow drop off the top. Or off the middle rope, because no way Honky Tonk Man's going to the top rope, let's be honest.
Nope.
And so Coco finally tags in Hogan. Hogan is just absolutely electric. I mean, literally, everybody's feeding him punches. Everybody's just feeling it. Jimmy Hart gets up on the ring.
Yeah.
And Kimchi gets up on the ring. Hell, Mr. Fuji gets up on the ring, and Hogan just totally misses him.
Yeah.
And, so that was craziness. Kamala, he knows where his bread's buttered. He gets himself in the match. He gets slammed. Gigantic pop. Drops the leg. Why was it a gigantic pop? Because he doesn't bump for motherfucking Coco. Yeah. And also drop kick to Kimchi. So Coco finally got somebody to bump for him.
Yeah.
That was the story of this match. Was the struggle of Coco Beware to get somebody to bump for him. Steve Lombardi's always there for you, Coco.
That's amazing.
That was probably one of my favorite reviews of all time. Yeah. I thought this was hilarious.
I was going to say that was a spectacular review. yeah, this one had a ton of energy, this match. It was super fun. There was an awesome leapfrog spot with Kamala where he leapt over Coco and then super kicked him right after, bounced off the ropes. That had great timing to it. I really liked that. This basically was like almost the same match as the Philly tag in a lot of ways, with Hogan repeatedly missing the hot tag, Coco playing face in peril for quite a long time. And then, yeah, it was just the heat in this was awesome. Just like the other Hogan matches and, the heat sequence on Coco was really good, I thought. And the crowd was just at a absolute fever pitch, perfect, ready for that, hot tag that Hogan got. And like you said, he just came in and cleaned house. Like,
man, he nailed everybody. Everybody got up on that apron.
Yeah, that was just amazing house cleaning by Hogan. And Fuji did get it eventually. He had to come back up and
oh, was that what it was?
Yeah, but he got it on the second go around. So yeah, Hogan got everybody.
I thought he just totally missed him.
Well, he missed him on the initial sweep, but then after the pin, he got it.
So, oh, after the pin. Oh, okay.
Yeah. To make it complete. This was just like a total example of like a crowd just eating out of the palm of the hands of the performers, especially the babyface, especially Hulk.
The Hawk, the Hulkster.
Yeah, eating out of the palm of the Hulkster. super fun. I'm glad this was recommended. This was recommended by Magpie on PWO, I believe.
Thanks, Magpie. Yeah. Sorry for all the swearing, Magpie.
Yeah, I was going to say.
There was a lot of swearing in that last review.
Yeah, that last review got a little X-rated, but that's fine.
I don't know. I don't think I talked about anybody being in a sexual position. Though, Kamala's stomach claw was, you know, oddly arousing.
Okay, you said it, not me. yeah, no, this was a fun match. I'd never heard of this one before, so this was a nice little hidden gem, if you will. So, wow. Well, we've come to the end here. Four real, just energy-packed matches out of the five. Hogan involved in three of them. Piper involved in three of them. the three big crowds, MSG, Boston Garden, and the Spectrum. And then Buffalo. Well, Buffalo brought it too. They had
and Buffalo. Fucking Buffalo even brought it.
Hey, well, you know, they're famous. They support the Bills. You know, great. So they have great sports fans. And their crowd brought it for this match. Yeah, so this was an enjoyable set of matches to look at. Marty, what was your favorite, what did you think was the best of the five?
Well, the best match was the Madison Square Garden elimination match.
Yeah,
but I really did actually enjoy Hogan and Coco versus Kamala and Honky Tonk Man quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. Yeah, I would say the MSG match is the best. It had the best finish.
I mean, it just had a lot of really good work. It was one of the more bomb heavy matches that we've seen. And general, like really good pace, just constant. It was just real good action packed match.
Yeah, it's a really, really, really good match. And
but I would say Hogan and Coco was my second favorite.
Number two, yeah, I would say that too. And then probably the Philly tag is number three. And then the Boston match was good too. Just electric atmosphere, and had a good finish in that one too. So yeah, I enjoyed all those. How about best face and Pero?
Best. All right, hold on. Let's take a look here. Probably Piper and the Hogan Piper versus Kamala Orndorff. You're probably going to tell me B. Brian Blair.
No. It was good, but not great. Yeah, I think that's the right call. Piper in Philly. Coco in Buffalo is good, too. But the Philly crowd was really behind Piper. Piper had a good couple matches tonight, for sure. Good performances on the farewell tour. And the best hot tag, is this in doubt?
I mean, it's a slam dunk for Hogan. I'm just trying to figure out which one I'd pick.
Yeah.
It wasn't the Philly one because they fucked up the camera.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, it was definitely the Hogan Coco versus Kamala Honky Tonk because it was just cool how everybody fed for him.
Yeah, it has to be that one. Yeah, that was the best one. And Hogan had the hot tag and Boston and Philly as well, but yeah, the Coco match, that was a classic Hogan hot tag sequence for sure. All right, well, fun matches. Next time, we will be looking at the regular tag teams once again from 1987, continuing on our journey, picking up post-WrestleMania 3 now. I don't know, there's not too many. Well, yes, the new Dream Team. We're going to have to look at them. I've mentioned that before. I'm interested to see what Valentine can do with Dino Bravo. And I definitely have not seen too many new Dream Team matches in my life. So
I've seen a couple. More matches than I've seen of Hercules.
We'll explore some of those. We got the Islanders turning heel shortly, but I guess we'll be saving that for the Strike Force versus Islanders show.
Oh, you know what we have? You know what the main tag team feud is of the summer?
Bulldogs and Hearts.
It is Bulldogs versus Hearts, and I think this is their best year together.
Yes, you mentioned that a few times before, so we'll have to look at maybe two or three, if possible, matches from that run. I know they have a match on Saturday Night's Main Event. They have a MSG match, maybe some other stuff.
I think I've seen two MSG matches, I think.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that'll be definitely a part of the next show, Bulldogs and Hearts 1987 version.
Yeah, for whatever reason, the 85 and 86 have made WWE DVDs, but the 87 never has.
No, it hasn't. It's completely forgotten. Part of their rivalry. So yeah, looking forward to that. We still have a lot of 1987 to cover. After that, like I said, we'll do a whole episode devoted to Strikeforce versus the Islanders, which I'm really looking forward to. And then we're going to end 1987 by tying up some loose ends, looking at some random stuff.
We have Strikeforce versus Hart Foundation towards the end of 87.
Yes, the big match. We have to see that. There.
Yeah, and they go around the horn too, but then I'm assuming it might be in 88.
Yeah, they go into 88. We would be remiss if we didn't look at the ladies, and specifically the Jumping Bomb Angels.
You're right. I did see that Jumping Bomb Angels versus Glamour Girls towards November was a rated match.
Very exciting team. I can remember when they came in and seeing them on TV, they blew me away because the men weren't doing what they were doing. They were very athletic, high-flying, fast. They were ahead of their time.
Well, I hope they blow me.
Yes.
I'm looking up what they look like, so I don't have to. I don't actually know what they look like, any of them. I don't know who. All right. So Jumping Bomb Angels are Japanese.
Yes.
And who are the Glamour Girls?
They're Lalani Kai and what was the Donna? Judy Martin? Judy Martin. Who is actually a pretty well-regarded worker. And then
Judy Martin. She sounds like she was like my math teacher, I think.
Yeah, well, if you're expecting the Glamour Girls to be good-looking, you're going to be greatly disappointed, Marty.
Am I? Oh, go on. Hold on. Let me find out.
I'll tell you that right now.
Wait. Holy shit. Whoa. Oh, this is disappointing. Look. All right, hold on. The Jumping Bomb Angels good looking?
We're setting the Divas Revolution back a few decades here tonight.
It's okay. We're in the 1980s here. We can manage this. All right. Yeah. All right. So this is definitely going to be based on work rate. There will be no curve because they're hot. So they're either going to succeed on the level of their work or they're not. There's no, wow, she's pretty good looking. So I'm going to give her a couple extra bonus points in this match.
That's good to know. No distractions.
There will be distractions.
So we'll be looking at a few matches of theirs, I think. And we will be looking at the big 10 team tag match from the first Survivor Series for sure. We'd be it's almost mandatory, I think, to look at that one before we finish 1987. And there's who knows, there'll be a few other things that'll pop up. So anyway, anything to say at the end here, Marty?
No, fun episode. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed my time talking to you. Looking forward to watching more World Wrestling Federation tag team action.
Yeah. So like I said at the beginning, kind of looking to pump these out in maybe a little faster clip than previously if the timing works out. So who knows? Could be another episode in another couple weeks. So look forward to it. And thanks for listening. Good night, folks.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I am a real American. Fight for the rights of every man. I am a real American. Fight for what's right. Fight for your life.
I can't let it slide. say your prayers, eat your vitamins, be true to yourself, true to your country, be a real American.